So let's begin with the first Torah. Vayoyim Hashem al Avram. God says to Avram, Lech lecha me'artzecha, go from your land. Me'oladetcha me'beis avicha. So, as we've said many, many times before, for the Eshbitzer, there's no such thing as history. Everything is happening now. And in Sefer Bereishis, really this is a blueprint for each person in their own life. So Avraham is also an archetypal explorer of the soul, and there are things from his life that we need to emulate. And God's first speech with Avraham, Lech Lecha, is also something that we, in our life, we all hear the call. See, it's written, Ki etzrik mayim al tzume, I will, as I pour water on the thirsting, the noizlim al yabosha, and rain on dry land. Kashe hischel Avram Avinu levakesh lechapisach esheresh achaim shele, when Avram Avinu went looking for the source of his life. One of the things that, again, we've learned in Ishbitz many times, is that there is what we think of as life, but when we get down to the basics of this, it's not really life, it's just busyness. Busyness is not life. Life is when you connect with the Shoyrish Hachaim, when you connect with the root of the life force. That is a different thing. The life force is God projecting himself into the universe. Right? Originally and ultimately, God is alone, God is one. And God says, I want there to be the other. I want there to be my children. So God makes a space inside, outside, however we understand this tzimtzum, for us to become. And then God becomes biology. God becomes life. God projects himself out into a process that we call life. That is the Shoyrish HaChaim, that is the root, that's the source, that is the life force. So Avram Avinu realizes that there's a difference between busyness and the life force. That busyness is not something you really call life. It's a, you know, it's no more life than organic chemistry is life. You know, life is not organic chemistry, right? The life that we think of when we start to think about it is God manifesting in the universe as a mind. Achri Avinoi, after Avram Avinu understands that Shekol Chemdes Olam Hazeh, that all the desires of this world, Lo Yitochnu Leikoros B'Shem Chaim, they don't deserve to be called life. Chaim Amitin, real emes. Ki Kol Chemdes Olam Hazeh, because all the instincts and all the drives that we have in this world, Urak Lahosir Tirdois V'Hamaniois. You know, what are the basic drives that a human being has? You know, we are interested in having a comfortable life, right? We want to live a life of ease and comfort. We want to reproduce. We want respect. You know, we want to have a position in the community and in the world. We want to feel safe, right? Now, all these things are instinctual. And these are the chemdos of Olam Hazeh. But none of them are really, they're not really cleaving to life, right? They're just a blueprint that life has for reproducing itself and, you know, evolution, right? Once you get past that, once you've removed your fear of annihilation, your fear of hunger, your fear of deprivation, once you've removed all those things that would prevent you from getting where you are, What is the life for which you were created? For which the world was created. So God says to him, Lech lecho. Go into yourself. Hainu La'atzmecha. So we've always translated lech lecha as guide, you know, go for your own sake, go. The Ishbitz is saying, no, it means go to you. Ki be'emes kol divrei ho'olam hazeh, because the truth is, yeah, kol divrei ho'olam hazeh lo yikor b'shem chayim, that all divrei ho'olam hazeh, all the mundane things, I mean, mundane is just Latin, right, for world, right? All the things that impinge on your consciousness all the time, that's not real life. Ve'ikah ha'chayim, and the source of life, timtzebach, you're going to find deeper inside yourself. So, if we imagine trying to think about what is it? What is consciousness? What is the mind? You know, there are parts of us that govern our liver function. We are not really aware, we're really not aware of those parts of our brain that are governing the function of our organs, that say, oh, too much bile, too little bile, what, the heartbeat's going a little bit fast, let's regulate. Oh, it looks like he needs a little extra energy, let's give him some adrenaline. All these things, these systems that we have inside us, we're not aware of those, right? They're unconscious. So then what is consciousness? There is a kloli, there is a system in the brain that is over, that looks over in a really big way, the big picture. It doesn't like interfere in the micro, it doesn't micromanage, right? Doesn't need to know exactly how many beats per second the heart is going at, or, you know, how many breaths per minute, or, you know, what the blood pressure is. Not really interested in that. It really looks from a big picture and looks at the gestalt. I have a system that looks at the gestalt of me. What am I doing in this room? How am I feeling? How am I relating to my environment? How am I relating to the people that are in my environment? And so on. So there are different levels going from unconscious right to this macro consciousness. And this macro consciousness is the one we think of as the mind. And the Rebbeinu Shlom says to Avraham, that's not the mind. Nishtos. That is busyness. You need to go down underneath. Lech lecho, go down deeper, ba'atzmecho. And then, the Ishbitzer brings another pasuk from Yeshaya, va'ato togil b'ashem, and you will rejoice in God. B'kdosh Yisrael tishalel, in the Holy One of Israel, you will rejoice. Zois hu hachayim. What is it? What is it that God says to Avram? If you go into yourself, you will find yourself inside God. Ve'al zeh nemar b'medrash, mi hu bal habiro, hitzitz olav bal habiro. The medrash compares Avraham in his time to a person who walks along a road and sees a metropolis, and he can't figure out who built it, who governs it, who's in charge. There doesn't seem to be anybody who's running the place. When you go into a home, you know, it's fairly easy to identify. There's a father, there's a mother, you know, that it's easy to see who's in charge, right? But somebody comes, a peasant comes to the big city, it's very bewildering. So This person, according to the Medrash, says, Toyma Shein Abira Manhig? What? Am I going to say that nobody's in charge of this bureau, of this capital, of this metropolis? Hits it's all of Balabir. So the Medrash says that the owner of the city is incensed, and he says to him, what do you mean? Ani Balabiro, I'm in charge. The Medrash doesn't really explain where it's coming from and where it's going to. On the level, on the outside level, it sounds like Avraham Avinu is looking at the world and he says, well, could it be that the world doesn't have anybody in charge? And God says to him, of course it has somebody in charge. I'm in charge. Lech lecha. How does that follow from there? Where does the words, the Medrash that brings this story and the Balabira, the owner of the metropolis who's incensed, who says to him, Lech lecha, how is this connected to the beginning of our Sedra where God says, Lech lecha? Doesn't really follow the narrative. So the Ishbitzer says, let's have a look again at the words of the Medrash. The Medrash says, Avraham Avinu says, Mi Baal Abir, who is the owner of this city? Hits it's all of Balabiro. So the owner of the city is incensed or glances upon him. Okefiha Nira, the Ishbitz says, would it be more appropriate that he glanced at him. Not he glanced on him. Well, the word Olav is different from the word Elav. Elav is to him, and Olav is upon him. So what is, he glanced upon him, he shouted upon him, he was incensed upon him, all those phrases would have been at, would be better, not upon. Ach b'ro'is Avraham Avinu Olav HaShalom is Esik Daraflogo. When the Eshbitz is explaining now that when Avram was looking at the world, and in his time, the Tower of Babel was built. So he sees the people coming together for what purpose? For an evil purpose, right? They were trying to rebel against God, right? So it's like the people of the city trying to overthrow their government. Except that in ancient times, you know, there wasn't a democratically elected government, right? There had to be a ruler. All cities had a ruler. But where's the ruler? So you see Korah b'shem Bir Dalakis. So when he sees this, the Dor HaFloga, the generation of the dispersal, they're building this tower. That's what we mean by, the Medrash means by the person coming to the city and seeing the place is all ablaze. Ki hoy bein of lepele. Avram was like really astonished. Veherim benafsho mi boro ele. He asks, why are people doing what they're doing? Avraham Avinu wasn't really so much interested. It's like somebody comes into a city and there's a riot going on. Instead of inquiring into the, you know, did the government do something, you know, that people are rioting, you know, to get involved in the politics, the right and wrong. No, there's another approach. You can look at the people who are rioting as an anthropologist and say, you know, this behavior is really bizarre. And not to get involved in the political right and wrongs. And the Ishbitz is saying here that this is what Avraham is doing. He's looking at the people, at their behavior, and he's saying, this is very weird behavior. How come these people are acting in such a strange way? Can it be that somebody in the background that should be doing something isn't? Are people the way they are because the person who should be in charge isn't in charge. Right? It's like coming and seeing a house full of children who are running wild, and you say to yourself, is there a parent missing here or something? Hitzitz Ola Balabira. So now, if we look at Avram as an anthropologist, asking an anthropological question rather than a political question, so now we understand what God says to him. Sheheshiv LaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says to him, Halitira ba'atzmecha ki lechol olam lo yikshe. Look, none of these people here are asking themselves, why are we behaving like this? You're the only one who's asking, why are we behaving like this? Ve'ein echad mehem sama lev lema mi osazos. And nobody in this city is asking themselves, are we perhaps being led? Are we being governed? Nobody's asking me also Zeus. You, Avraham, are the only one who's looking at this as a behavioral thing. From the question that you have, you could figure it out for yourself. If you are looking, if you're so different, then there must be somebody, there must be other ways. And if these people are doing like this and these two people are doing like this, then there isn't a monolithic picture of what is happening. Nimtze boira hasoivah kol almin umemalek kol almin. You will have to come to the conclusion that there is a unifying, that there is a one, that there is God who fills everything and surrounds everything. And he's the one who's waking you up to ask this question. And this is why the Medrash says that the Balabira, the owner of the city, is incensed upon him, meaning that he says to the person, no, look at yourself. Hainu al kushyosai. From the question that you're asking, the question is its own answer. Every year I learn this piece of Ishbitz, I have to say honestly that there are about 10 levels of what he's saying, and I think I only get about 5. Let's look at the second oid, b'medrash. Ro'o biru d'olakas, the Ishbitz has another approach to this medrash. So the man comes and he sees the city ablaze. Hischel lishoel, and he starts to ask, Toimisha habiru zois b'li manik, what could it be that the city doesn't have government? Hitzitzol of Balabiru, so the owner of the city is incensed upon him. Ha'inim b'zekiacha, when Avraham starts to look at all the changes, he sees so many things happening to the world. In the generation of the flood, the deluge, in the generation of the dispersal. So Avraham Avinu starts to ask, who's in charge? Who's making all these things happen? So God says to him, this is not how Ayid. This is not how Ayid is supposed to think. The way of the nations of the world, when they see something changing, something's not usual, something is out of the ordinary, so then people take stock. And they say, what are we doing to the world? And let's try and understand what the consequences of our behavior are. But when everything is flowing normally and the world is running according to nature, nobody's asking the question, are we doing the right thing? Are we doing the wrong thing? Obviously we're doing the right thing because the world is running correctly. Because they don't believe that Hashem is Baruch, that every day that the sun shines is a nace, that they don't think of. If the sun were to stop shining, then the people would say to themselves, what do we need to look at? kol rega, that every moment, everything that happens is in the hands of God. That they don't see. Ubiladoi ein shem tova shoylet, and that nothing is, there's no other rule in the universe but God. So God says to Avram, don't come looking at the world because of all the changes that you see. Because that's not the Jewish way. Aval chelik Yaakov lo yikaele. Ki yoytze hakoel. We say, yoytze hakoel. God makes everything. Hainu shi yisro ma'aminim. What we as Jewish people, we believe. Shilulei shahashem yisbor yosoy velo oylam. If not for the fact that the Ribbono shel Olam carries the world, bears the world. Lo niskaymu af rega. The world wouldn't exist, not even for one moment. So when Avram Avinu approaches, saying, "What's going on? What's the meaning of all these changes in the world?" Then God says to him, "Lech lecho. That's not the way you should be thinking. Haynu lechelik Yaakov. Go into the Jew inside you. Lech lecho." Go to the Yid inside, Shitaki af b'derech ha-tevus gedulas Hashem Yisbaruch, and come and ask your question as a Jew, in which case you don't need to be looking at the flood, you don't need to be looking at any of the changes that are happening. You can find God. Your question should be, why does the sun come up every morning? And does the sun, in fact, come up every morning? And is it possible the sun won't come up every morning? And what is my response to the sun coming up every morning? God says to Avram, Lech lecho, go el ha'oretz asher reko, to the land that I will show you. Ki Avram avinu olav ha'shalom hoya godl chukosoi. Avram Avinu, his greatest desire was Leida Mekoim Dvekes Chiyuseh El Hashem Yisbarach. He wanted to know where inside himself the divine, the flow, the life force is strongest. He wanted to know where he's connected to God. Ad Heichen Magir. And how far is the divine connection? At which point is his body chemistry, organic chemistry? And at which point does the organic chemistry stop and the divine begin? Omer lo Hashem Yisbarach, go el ha'oretz asher ereko, to the land that I will show you. To the land that I will show you. And haynu dvekoscho ubemokim anikra shereko. Avram Avinu, you should know that your life is connected to that place that I will show you. Ki ein leisof, because it's infinite. There is no place where it stops. Asher ereko is not a place. It's not a real place to say, go to the place that I will show you. There is no such place. Every place is such a place. And when you reach there, there's still a place that I will show you. Because God says, once you reach that place, you'll realize that it goes on forever, and that the enlightenment, there is no one place inside you where you are connected to God, but the connection is infinite, and I will show you. V'zois timtze be'eretz Yisrael. And to be shown that, you have to go to the land of Israel. So, God makes a covenant with Avram, and he says to him, your children are going to inherit the earth. So Avram's response is, "B'mo'eda ki yirashen." How do I know? How will I know? How can I know that I am going to inherit the earth? So, Ki Avram bikesh mi Hashem Yisborach. Avram asked of God, Ache kol habirurin shiniz gala hashchina al yodoy ba'oilom. After Avram has gone through the tests, and after Avraham has, you know, clarified what is important, what is not, what is holy, what is not, what is selfish, what is selfless, what is brave, what is cowardly, what is emes, what is not so emes. After everything is over, Avram says, I know what you're saying to me. You're saying that, what was Avram's greatest desire? Avram's greatest desire was that God be manifest in the world, not just to Avram, but to the whole world. Avram wanted to spread the knowledge of God in the whole world. And God's saying to Avram, yes, it's going to happen. And Avram says, and after it's happened, Bameh Eda, how am I going to know? Hainu Shiikova Belivi Mibli Shum Hefsik. How am I going to know? How is it going to be in me without ever stopping? How am the word, the idea, the concept of Das is the living in the now. Chochma is in the past and Bina is in the future, and Das, when they come together, this is the moment of knowing, this is the moment of now. And Avram says, how am I going to live in this knowledge of God in the now? How is it going to be fixed in me that I am going to be in this forever and ever? And this is a question that all of us have, right? We all have moments of knowing, but how can we hold it? How can we hold on to the knowing? How can we become the knowing? So God says to him, take me a 3-year-old bullock. Hainu, what does it mean? For this you're going to need the Sefer of Vayikra, right? In Vayikra, in the book of Vayikra, we have the Seder of the Korbanot, we have the Seder of the order of the sacrifices, which we call Avoida, worship. Hainu, al yidei Avoida yikva belibcho bekol pam yoise. It's only through the worship of God that the knowledge of God is fixed deeper and deeper all the time. Ad shiyeh nikva le'olam, until it's fixed forever. V'zeh nikra yerusha. And that's the meaning of inheritance. So Avram is saying, "Bema eda, how am I going to know ki iroshena, that I'm going to inherit it, meaning that it's going to be fixed to me forever, because an inheritance is yours." So God says to him, "Kachli egel meshuleshes, go through the process of sacrifice and worship." And that is the answer to Bema eda. The next Torah, Vayivin Shom Avram Mizbeach Vayikru B'Shem Hashem. Avram builds a Mizbeach, builds an altar, and he calls in the name of God. So, the Ishbitz says, Nisoya in Harisha, in the first trial, Shel Avram Avinu Hoye Lechlecha. And God says to him, go, leave, go from the land where you're born, go to the land that I'm going to show you. Hainu, what was he promising? Anias v'tzimtzum. When you have to leave your home, then it's almost a promise of poverty. Right? You have to pack up your stuff on the back of a few camels and donkeys and go leave your home, leave the fields, the orchards, whatever it is, and go. So the first thing is that you have to constrict your life and do without all the material things that you had. This is the first thing that every person has to go through in their spiritual journey. Not to have resentments and complaints of God. However, a person even though we all have to go through in our life, we all have to go through poverty, meaning there are things that we want that we can't have. Nevertheless, we should pray that it shouldn't be a life of deprivation. Diktuke anius is where you have to acknowledge that you're deprived. You have to have the feeling of deprivation and say, you know, there's a piece of bread, I need one piece of bread, I don't have. Because those kind of sensations don't make a person close to God. They make a person distant from God. So a person knowing that we have to go through a process and a period of doing without, still we need to pray that it not be severe. The ikke diktuke anius. So what is the definition of diktuke anius, of the feeling of deprivation? Mishein es samech b'chelko, if you can't be happy with what you have. A lot of people do without, and they're satisfied, and there can be a certain level of contentment even with the without. But if you're not content, if you can't be content, why? Because you don't have mamsh enough for your basic needs. The roitzeba moiseris, and you want more. Because wanting more is only natural. Alzeh tzorech levakish ma'ashem yisborech shlo yis'avel moiseris. So a person, there's two sides to diktuke anius. On the one hand, we have to pray to God that we don't have to go in our poverty, in our tzimtzum constriction, that we don't have to go through real penurious deprivation. On the other hand, I have to pray to God that I be given the gift of contentment with what I have, and that I not always be wanting more. You know, one person's contentment is another person's deprivation. For one person, you know, having clothing that doesn't have buttons on it, right? That's already like, that's unbearable. For somebody else, it's laughable. Right? I have a shirt. Psst. So there are levels in diktuke anius. What I think of as being unbearable deprivation, somebody else may think of as semi-luxury. So how can we define? How can we have a definition of poverty as opposed to diktuke anius, which is that's useful to everybody? And the bottom line is, how do I feel about my poverty? If I feel that my poverty is bearable, manageable, you know, I'm not rich, but you know, I'm not desperate. Then I'm in poverty, but I'm not in diktuke anius. And if I'm rich, but I feel constantly that I need more, I'm in diktuke anius. The bottom line is, I need to pray that I have a certain sense of satisfaction with what I have, and that it's enough, and that I don't always want more. Kamo shebekusa b'Yaakov, as it's written with Yaakov, v'Yaakov ish tam, Yaakov is a simple person. What does it mean that he's tam? The word tam means like finished, whole. Shehu yisholem b'nafshei mibli shum tav lo moisoros. Yaakov had enough. If you asked him, what do you have? He'd say, I have enough. Rak kifirotz naboyri yisborach keini kavu b'hava. Whatever God was going to give him was going to be enough. Yaakov Avinu didn't define what was enough. V'chein hoi tefilas Avram Avinu b'nisoy narishin. So this is Avram Avinu's prayer at the first trial. She is Samech b'chelko, he says, God, please help me rejoice in what I have. And so then my poverty not be a feeling of deprivation. And this is the meaning of the verse, Vayikru b'shem Hashem, that Avram calls in the name of God. Hainu, he calls, Shehanias lo yavirenu chas v'chelila al das koine. He's praying that his poverty not make him, separate him, or come between, or somehow deflect him from the consciousness of God. That's the meaning of to call in the name of God. Al kein, therefore, kishechozem emitzrayim, when Avraham Avinu is on his way back from Egypt, Nema, it's written, v'Avraham koved moed, Avraham is very heavy, with cattle, and camels, and sheep, and servants, and maidservants, and all kinds of wealth. Hainu, what this means is, achashin isbar ba'aniyas, after Avram has gone through the trial of not having a lot, of being poor, the birah gomer, with like he's been truly tested, b'nisoyin harishon in this first test, nema kovid mo'id, so then when he's rich, it says he's very heavy with wealth. Lushan kvedus, the word kovid means heavy in the sense of it was a burden. Shahoye yorei l'nafshoy, because now Avram is afraid. Mipneho ashiris. Now he experiences wealth as much a burden as his poverty. Like the Tefillah of Shleim HaMelech and Mishlei in Proverbs, King Solomon prays, Rosh v'oyshe al titimli, don't give me poverty and don't give me wealth. Because just as easily as the resentments around poverty can make a person disconnect from God, the opposite can happen with wealth. And so, again, it says there, that Avram calls in the name of God. Because just as he prayed when he went into the poverty stage of his growth, he prayed that the poverty not disconnect him from God. So he builds another altar when he is rich, and he prays again in the name of God, please don't let my wealth disconnect me. Ubeloit, but with his nephew Loit. Loinem aloshen kovet. He was also rich, but the Torah doesn't say that he was heavy with wealth. Rak nemai, it only says, v'gam leloit ha'oileches Avram hoye miknarav, that also Loit, who was with Avram, he also had tremendous wealth. And the v'hoyo, just the word v'hoyo, ein v'hoyo ala loshen simcha, one of the rules of the sages is that the word v'hoyo means joy. Vayihi always means something tragic is happening, and Vahoyo always means something happy is happening. So Loit only had joy in his wealth. Kiloi hoyo boy shum yireklal, because Loit never had any fear. What was his fear? Well, that his wealth would somehow disconnect him from God? He wasn't connected, right? But Avram it says it was very heavy. The whole thing was a burden. Because of the fear that he had, that somehow it would damage him. And he went on his journeys. Avram, and again, Avram called in the name of God. Because now he's also afraid that they could possibly disturb his dveikus, his connection. And this was Avram's life. And this was the essential, one of the greatnesses of Avram. That whatever is happening to him, oh, he's afraid. He's afraid that somehow it's going to come between him and God. What does Avram, from these things that we've been learning in Ishbitz, we get a picture. Avram doesn't grow up in a Jewish home, right? Avram doesn't grow up in a home where people talk about God. Avram grows up in a pagan house, right? Avram's father, Terach, makes idols and worships them and, you know, not nice. At some point, Avram realizes that there's a creator. Avram doesn't expect to have a relationship with the Creator, because Avram says, well, who am I, right? But Avram is absolutely sure that there is a God. Right? So, Avram doesn't know who God is. He didn't have anybody to teach him who God is. So Avram starts a dialogue with God, saying, you know, Master of the world, Creator of the world, King of the world, I don't know who you are, but I know you are, right? I just want you to know that this Avram here, that I know you are. And if you have any jobs that you need doing, I'm available. I can't imagine why you would need me, but if you need me, if there's anything you need to done in the world, just let me know. And Avram spent a lifetime just talking these ideas through with himself, with his wife Sarai, with people that he met. And then, when he was 75 years old, he hears the voice of God. He says, Avram, lech lecho me'artzecho. Leave, go into yourself, all these things. And Avram, from that moment on, is only afraid that something may disturb or interfere or break this connection that he now has, right? This is Avram's fear. So first he prays that the test of anias of poverty doesn't interfere, and then he prays that the test of wealth doesn't interfere. And throughout Avram's life, as he goes through these trials, he's not thinking in terms of the trials of winning. For him, the only good thing that will happen is if nothing disturbs his relationship with his creator, the master of the world. And the worst nightmare is that something will. And the Ishbitz explains that this is why Avram, we find in his journeys, Vayelech l'masov, he goes here, he goes, and wherever he goes, he's built an altar and he calls in the name of God. What does that mean? Now the Ishbitz says, this is the meaning, because Avram is entering a new stage, and again he feels threatened that somehow his connection with God, his Dvekut, will be broken by the new test. And so that is what he's praying, not that he succeed in the test, but that the test itself not interfere with the connection that he has. So then the Torah tells us that the kings of the east, they come and they make war with the kings of Sodom and Amorah, Ad and Tzvoim. And they come from Babylon and Kazdin and Ur and these places, and they take prisoners all the people who lived in Sodom. And Avram and his nephew Lot has parted, and Lot had gone to live in Sodom with his family. So Avram gives chase, and he goes chasing after these kings from the east, and he does battle with them, and he conquers, he vanquishes them, and he releases all the captives, and he comes back triumphantly, leading all the freed prisoners, including his nephew Lot. And as he comes through Yerushalayim, because he had chased them up as far as Dan in the north, out to greet him comes Malkitzedek, Melech Sholem, the king of Salem, who brings wine and bread, V'hu Kohen Le'el Elyon, and Malkitzedek is the Kohen, the priest of the Most High. And he says, Boruch Avraham Kel Elyon, blessed is God to Kel Elyon. And the question is, Boruch Avraham, why is Avraham blessed before God? These are the things that the Ishbitz is going to look at. Siv, it's written, Bi Melochem Yimlechu. With me, says the Torah, kings reign. With me, kings reign. V'hinei kfi ha-pshat ho-yelichtoiv bi yumlechu melochem. It should say, it's hard to translate this into English, but with me is the reign of kings. You know, a king first has to reign before he becomes a king, right? He needs a reign, and then he becomes a king. So the order of the words here, bi melochem yimlechu, is incorrect. With me, king's reign should be, with me is the reign of kings. In other words, the power that kings have to reign comes from me, says the Torah. So the sovereignty, the rulership, the power is with me. So the word power should come before the thing itself. But it doesn't. It says, "Bi melochem yimlechu." With me, kings reign. Ach, he says, "Remez bezeh she'en haKodesh Baruch Hu memane lemelech." God doesn't appoint a king as a king. Rak mi sheyuchel limlech techila la'atzmai. The person first has to already be a king. In order to be a ruler, you first already have had to be a ruler on yourself. Oisai, such a person, memane gam al acherim, God appoints also over others. Kini shenema, as it says in Masech Ta'ovos, Ezehu gibor, who's strong, hakoivish is Yitzro, is somebody who can vanquish his own desires. Bezeu, this is the meaning of the posuk, be with me, melochim, people who are already kings, yimluchu, they will reign. Hainu, Misha Moilech al Atzmai, somebody who can already reign over himself, v'sichloi, Moishel al Tavosoi, and his mind is already in charge of his desires, oz yimlechu, then he can become a king, hainu yiyah melech al kol over others. V'ein tzorich lashgiach al misnagid loy, and one of the things about a king, as opposed to a governor, what's the difference between a king? And there's the assumption that the king's actions are God, divinely inspired. And the king doesn't have to pay attention to somebody who doesn't like him, or somebody who's, you know, opposes him, or somebody who complains. That the king is allowed to do what he thinks is right and follow through. Since his kavona is l'shem shemaim. It's a really important spiritual principle that when a person has reached that level of malchus in themselves, when a person is operating from the sphere of malchus in themselves, don't have to be constantly double thinking themselves. A person who has reached the level of malchus in themselves doesn't have to constantly question and have an adversarial relationship with himself. Like once you've reached the level of malchus in yourself, you're allowed to assume that what you're doing is right. Because up until this point, you've led your life l'shem shemayim, and you've achieved mastery over your desires, and so it's okay just at this point to trust yourself that what you want to do is the right thing. And not whenever somebody says you're doing the wrong thing, to have to say, maybe you're right. Maybe they're wrong, is the proper response. V'zeh shekosev Malki Tzedek Melech Sholem. Malki Tzedek is the king of Sholem. Hainu shehoyu b'tchilo Melech Tzedek. First, this man, his name, we call him Malki Tzedek. Really, his name was Shem. This is Shem, the son of Noach. Why is he called Malki Tzedek? Because he's the king, Tzedek of Tzedek. Shemolach al atzmoy b'tzidkoy. Because he was king over himself in his righteousness. Ba'achekach melech sholem. And then he becomes king of Sholem hu Yerushalayim. So first he's king over himself, and then he becomes king of Jerusalem. V'zeh ha'tam, this is the reason. Shechodesh nissen hu rosh hashanah lemelochim. Kings, when you need to, especially in ancient times, you had to have an agreed date for when does the second year of the king begin. Not everybody, you know, you're doing a business deal with somebody, who remembers when the coronation was, what day, what month. So every month, every year, when Nisan came around, it was a new year for kings. So even if the king had been crowned around Hanukkah time, when it came the first of Nisan, it's the second year of the... So all the documents that are done from the first of Nisan will have in the second year of the reign of His Majesty. Why has Nisan been chosen as the place from which the Rosh Hashanah, so to speak, of Malchus is? It should have been the month of Sivan, the third month, Kiboinit na Torah Lisro, because in the third month the Torah is given. Shiksiv bo abim lochim yamlichu, because the Torah says it's with me that kings reign. So if it's with me that kings reign, then the king's reign should be counted from the third month, from the month of Sivan. But as we've said, la'ashen shenemet tchila b'imelochem, that you have to be a king before you can become a king. Ve'achekach yimlechu, so first you have to have shown your ability to reign over yourself before you're given some kingdom to reign over. Hanishim melech al atzmai v'zeh b'chodesh nissen, this happens in the month of Nisan. It's true that in the month of Sivan we become king over the world, but in the month of Nisan we become king of ourselves. How? Shisro mitzumtzumim ba'achilas lechem oini, because we constrict ourselves in the month of Nisan more than any other time. We reign over our desires and we eat matzah and we don't eat chametz. Omekabel olav oila boira. And this is accepting upon ourselves the yoke of the Creator, Yisborach. V'lecho midi pas yovesh b'litam. And we agree to eat this dry bread, this cracker, without the taste of bread. V'loy madanim. And we would rather eat this bread of affliction and be beneath the yoke of God, rather than eating all the delicacies, tachas oil bos of Adam, beneath the yoke of a person. So there's a symbol in the month of Nisan that we take this poverty upon ourselves, and we say we would rather be poor and be the servants, be the people of God, and God is king over us, rather than be rich and enjoy the great pleasures and be citizens of Egypt. Don't think that Egypt was physically that hard in the sense of like deprivation. Because if it was, then we wouldn't always have been moaning, we want to go back to Egypt. We say, why did you bring us out of Egypt? We remember all the things that we have. B'shivtenu al sirabosa. We remember when we dwelt there by the meat pot. We weren't lying. Al yedezeh yumlechu. Because by becoming kings over our own decisions, then we achieve sovereignty, we develop that ability to be a king. Hainu al kol ha'olam, over the whole world. V'zeh b'chodesh Sivan, and that only happens in the month of Sivan. Al yedei shenitnu bo ha'Torah. But before we can receive the Torah which elevates us to the level of royalty, we first have to display those elements of royalty over ourselves. And this is the meaning here. Malki Tzedek Melech Sholem. He is Malki Tzedek, King of Sholem. V'al zeh yikore Melech Sholem ki. This is why he's called King of Sholem. Ki Shem Ben Noach. Really, the person that we call Malki Tzedek, he's Shem Ben Noach. He's Shem, the son of Noach. Doirish v'chofetz moed b'toybos Yerushalayim. Why is he called King of Sholem? Because his desire was to protect Yerushalayim. You know, in the world of commerce, then, you know, New York and Paris and Berlin and London, these are capital cities, right? But in the world of Shabbos, in the world of davening, in the world of avodah, in the world of simcha, in the world of peace, then Yerushalayim is the capital of the whole world. Right? We don't live in a world of peace. We don't live in the world of Shabbos. So Yerushalayim is an unimportant city, right? But Shem ben Noach knew the truth, right? And he didn't want to be the king of Paris. He wanted to be the king of Yerushalayim, because he knew that Yerushalayim has to be protected. The Chayin, therefore, why is it important for us that we not call him Shem, the son of Noach? Why does the Torah call him Melech Sholem? Because there is a drama happening here. Avram Avinu comes back with all these prisoners from the war. Among them is Lot. Right? I mean, that's why he went. That's why he went to war with these kings, right? But Kasherosh Avram Talmidai, when Shem sees that Avraham, his servant, his Talmud, his disciple, his student, holach lehatzil Lot, he's put all his energy out to save Lot. Because Shem couldn't even begin to comprehend why Avram Avinu would risk everything to go and save Lot. What is the meaning of this? On the contrary, Avraham shouldn't have gone to save Lot. Who's going to come out of Lot? Amoin and Moav. They are the worst neighbors of Yerushalayim. They are the evil neighbors. They are the ones, Ammon and Moav had no real grouse with the Jewish people, right? They lived in Transjordan. But they sent messengers to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, and egged him on and promised him support and paid him money and did everything they could that Nebuchadnezzar should come and make war against Yerushalayim and destroy it. So Shem ben Noach, Malki Tzedek, he's the king of Yerushalayim, right? He says to Avram, why did you go and save Lot? We know the fact that after the cities of Sodom and Amorah are destroyed, Lot ends up in the cave with his two daughters, and they have these two sons, one's called Ammon, one's called Moab. These are the fathers of these two nations who are Shivve Bishad Rishlaim. These are the evil neighbors. V'gam Hashem soina oisam. And we know that God hates them. Ki hizir aleim shelo yavoi b'kol. Because God commanded that we're never allowed to marry anybody from Ammon and Moab, even if they become Jews. How could Avram Avinu have risked his life to go save Lot? However, because Shem knows that Avram is Avram, so Shem knows that Avram doesn't just do things without a good reason. Shem also knew that Avraham is not just going to make a big blunder and that God isn't going to protect him. He knew who Avram was. So Shem, Malki Tzedek, prays, God, please open my eyes. Please tell me what's going on. And that's why the Pasuk tells us, why do I need to be told that here in the verse? Because while he was bringing out the bread and wine to Avraham, he was being the Kohen, he was doing his avodah, his worship, and he was davening. He says, please God, show me what's really going on here. He says, I really don't understand what's happening here. Show me what is Avram. I know him, I taught him. Let me know what's going on. So God opens his eyes. Nothing that Avram Avinu has done has been in vain. Yeah, it's true that from Ammon and Moab are going to come out of Lot. Like we say, God, you know, how could you let, at the time of the destruction of the temple, Jeremiah the prophet says, you know, God, you said, don't let these people come into your congregation, even if they're Jewish. And here, look, here we are exiled from Yerushalayim, and the Ammonites and the Moabites are just running amok. Who did God say that we mustn't marry? The men from the tribe of Ammon. But we have a halacha la Moshe Mesinai. We have a halacha that goes all the way back to Moshe, that the women from the nation of Ammon and Moab are allowed if they become Jewish, they're allowed to marry immediately. Va'adurav, on the contrary, mizeh nitzmach malchus beis David and Shlomo, the whole house, the kingdom of David and Shlomo comes from the women of the nations of Ammon and Moab. Hashem ikikim malchus eretz Yisrael v'shlem, the whole Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim depends on the women who come from the nation of Ammon and Moab, who are Rus Hamoyaviyot, Ruth, the Moabite, and Naama the Ammonite, who married King Solomon. Olezois Omar, and this is why Malkit Tzedek says, Boruch Avram Lekel Elyon, Vehigdim Birchus Avram. So Malkit Tzedek blesses Avram before he blesses God. Boruch Avram Lekel Elyon. Ki gam Avraham osu pu'ula l'mala mahasigosu, because in terms of Malkit Tzedek, once he saw what was really going on, he realized that Avram is beyond him, is much higher than him, just as God is much higher than him. Rak Hashem Yisburach he'il liboy l'zeh. Malkit Tzedek understood that Avram was being led by God, that God was arousing Avram's heart, and inspired Avram to risk his life to save Lot. And because Shem, Malkit Tzedek, realizes that it's Avraham who's bringing this new way of worshipping God and this new way in being into the world, he realized that Avraham is greater than him. At that moment, Shem ben Noach, or Malkit Tzedek as we know him, is stripped of the kohuna. He's no longer the kohen. V'nitna l'Avraham, and the kohuna from that moment on belongs to Avraham. Ki hoide, because Malkit Tzedek admitted she'Avraham godol mimenu, Avraham is greater than him. Moshe Kusev, as it's written, there's a verse in Tehillim, it says, Atu kohen l'oilam, you are kohen forever, al Dibrosi Malkit Tzedek, are my words to Malkit Tzedek. Hainu, God says, Ani hi arti einav shel Malkit Tzedek, I enlightened, I opened the eyes of Malkit Tzedek, sheyirish Avram godol mimenu, he should see that Avram is greater than him. V'hoidim atzmoy, of his own accord, he said, you know, I am moide, I admit that Avraham is the one who should be the Kohen. I see that the time has run over. Thank you.